Welcome to The Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders shaping the future. I'm H.R. Huntsman. I'm the founder of Leader's Edge, the creator of the Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University, and I am thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each and every episode, we champion the innovative strategies, courageous decisions, and inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So whether you're looking to refine your leadership skills or you simply want to be inspired, my friend, you are in the right place. Today's guest is someone who embodies resilience, authenticity, and the relentless pursuit of freedom. Marta Tchaikovska grew up in communist Poland, where the dream of climbing Yosemite's legendary El Capitan became the spark that ignited a lifelong journey of adventure. For more than 25 years, she's hung from granite walls, trekked to the remote corners of the globe, and stared down both the exhilaration and the peril that comes from living on the edge. But listen, Marta's story isn't just about mountains, it's about transformation. A near-fatal climbing accident forced her to confront the deepest question of all: how do I truly want to live? Her answer: to empower others, to break free of fear, self-imposed limitations, and the constraints of society, to build lives of authenticity, courage, and wild possibility. I love it. Today, Marta is more than a climber. She's a mountain forge guide for leaders, dreamers, and everyday badasses ready to unleash their potential. With raw honesty, boldness, and a sharp sense of humor, she challenges people to leave the excuses at base camp and summit the life they were meant to live. So, my friends, buckle up, because this conversation will take you from the rock faces of Yosemite to the inner peace of the human spirit. Marta Tchaikovska is here to show us what it means to live wild, free, and unapologetically alive. Marta, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
It's been great sitting with you, HR.
Thank you. So you say that we're not here to prove our worth, but to live it. What made that sentence a non-negotiable sentence for you?
First thing I want to say is that this is just my preference. This is how I like to look at life. It's not a prescription. So I do not want to create dogma for anyone. For me, we're a human animal. And so we are largely led by so much more than our intellect. We think we are led by our intellect, but truly we're led by so many different things that we're not fully in control of. And to me, this is a way to be led by our energy is the truest way for me to live. The one that cuts through a lot of prescriptions that are given from the outside, and therefore has us expressing the most of ourselves.
What does this look like, though? What does living my worth and proving my worth look? How would it look differently in your life and my life? How would I feel differently if I'm living my worth versus proving my worth?
Can best describe it from my life, because I don't want to make any assumptions. And I don't want to make anyone wrong for living however they are, but I know for me that whenever I come in with trying to follow someone else's prescription or fulfill something that I feel like is needed of me, and I've done a lot of this in my life. I was born in a family that I acquired a strategy of making sure everybody's fine and I do all the things well so that nobody's going to blow up, nothing's going to fall apart, right? So as many of us, I was conditioned into doing the right thing that looked good from the outside. And I would say the 40 years of my life, I've been detoxing from it and listening deeply and going, no, what is it that's really coming through? And when I do listen to that, my life is just more functional, straight up. Things work out better because I am not shrinking. I am not stopping my life force. And instead, I am letting what is in me, the fire in me, go out and transform the world.
So how did you get here? I know you had a serious accident. You had what you call this bathroom floor incident experience. Tell us how you got here.
That one will make people want to read
Yeah, and we'll get to the book in a second for sure.
book. A few different things, major things that happened in my life. One was growing up in a family where I decided to make sure that I put everything together. It is my job to make sure people are okay.
That's
Yeah, I
right.
learned that at two. Right. At two, I'm just showing you a little person. But, and then I was super lucky around 15 where I A, discovered rock climbing that then shaped the rest of my life. I discovered it and I said yes to it. And the second thing that happened was a dual thing. Poland, where I grew up, went from communism to market economy, and my parents got a divorce. And I was like, oh. Nobody's like what everybody says is the truth, is the way, is what is not true. And I saw it
Interesting.
unfold in front of my eyes. And so that gave me the out going, oh, if you guys are not gonna uphold to what you said is true, then sure, I don't need to. That means I get to do whatever I want. So I had the out. And that out took me on a big journey of just following whatever I wanted. And that a lot of it looked like, especially in the early ages, like disregarding the societal standards of go and get a career, go and do this. And I was like, that's all made up. I'm just gonna go here and climb rocks and do what I want. I did that for many years, and then I realized that there is an emptiness in this. There it really that what started as this freedom thing actually pigeonholed me into I'm just doing whatever I want to do. And there was a moment where it didn't feel good anymore. And this is where I knew deeply that I wanted to commit my life into helping others discover the freedom that will make them feel a certain way, a joy, enjoyment, curiosity, love for their life, so that they can go and apply their gifts into the world. So I knew that, but I didn't yet know how I was going to do that. And that's a whole different story.
Was this a gradual, and you didn't get to the accident or the bathroom experience either. Was this a gradual maturity out of this self-centered self-expression into realizing, wait, I've purpose for impact. I have meaning for helping others? Or was there like this light bulb moment where you went, holy crap, this isn't about just me climbing rocks. I can give back to the world.
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing, and maybe some of the listeners will relate to this, the biggest barrier to this was that I didn't think that what I represented was good, just in very simple terms, that there wasn't anything that I could contribute. And to me, that was a big breakthrough. And this had to do with my accident where when I fell and I broke my back, and I had many hours in the car thinking about what that might mean to my life. And I realized, you know what? I'm done deciding. I'm done camping out of I am not here to bring value to the world. I am going to challenge this construct that was given to me, right? It was given to many women and many men as well, that you're not special. You got nothing to give. Get in line and do the thing, right? And I was like, okay, I'm done. I almost died here. What do I have to lose? If I was gonna to live truly,
Yeah.
this would be the way I wanted to live.
And was that the switch from this self-centered, I'm going to do whatever I want lifestyle to I'm going to use my life to the benefit of others? Was it that backbreaking incident where you said, I can't just live just for myself? That's the emptiness, right? Was that the emptiness for you?
Yeah, that was the emptiness, but the big, I don't want to make it overly simplistic because I don't want to say that living for others is better. It's where we are in the moment, where we are in our emotional evolution, that's where we need to be. So for some reason, I needed to go and detox from the whole thing for so many years. And then as I work that into my nervous system. And I was like, I know how to experience freedom. I know how to be resilient. I know how to do the hard thing. I know how to be on the edge of my comfort zone. I know all of these things. I have actually gathered a toolkit to bring back to the village. And my book just came out, and I was talking to my sister, and she's, I can't, it's so incredible to me how much awareness you have of your emotions that happened, but also how you're not blaming anyone and how at peace you are. And I said, that's what took the time. Maturing into this, that's what took the time.
Let's talk
So.
about the book. You mentioned it. Obviously, I was going to get to it. Masters of Badassery. So tell us how you got to be an author. What made you want to put this journey on paper, these lessons on paper for us to read, listen to, etc.? How'd you get there?
I've been sitting on, I have all these crazy, amazing climbing stories that happened in my life. Magic, international travel, huge peaks, incredible people. This all happened in my life. And I knew I wanted to share these stories. And that it's been like a decade. I'm like, I want to share these stories. And it was just that voice. And then in January, it's funny, in January this year, I took a bit of an inventory, and I was like, I've been talking about writing a book for years. I'm done talking about it. I'm writing a book. The book is coming out. I remember September, January like 5th, I told my friend, you will have my book in September. You will have a printed copy of my book in September. But I didn't know what I was writing about. I knew I had some stories, and I was literally in my backyard planting some trees. We had to cut some trees out, and I'm like, I'm going to replant trees. So I'm out there in the hole digging. And it came to me what the book's going to be about. I'm like, oh my God, I am like all of, I saw how the pieces came together. And so the book is for everyone that's sitting on a desire and a life force, but convincing themselves that it's not worth following, that you don't have what it takes to be successful, or that the world doesn't need it, because this is where I was so for so many years. And we write always
For
for the
us.
past for us.
Yeah.
And so when I had that insight in the hole, that was it. I was like, oh my God, I know what I'm doing. And I sat down. I had some client trips in January and February. And in March, I sat down. And so March, April, end of May, I had a written book. I submitted my manuscript to my editor. And I was like, okay, I was really sitting on this. It was ripe and ready. I just didn't know.
Give us the gist of it. Masters of Badassery. Are you telling stories about people who climb, your own journey, us? Are you telling us we can tap into some of this? What's the premise here?
Yeah, the book has three parts. Part one is me telling my story. This is me going back to my childhood and different things that happened. It also echoes, however, this is how life is, right? We don't just experience something and then know how to do better, and then we never experience it again. Things in our lives echo. So the same pattern will show up many different times. And so I didn't want to show a journey of healing and becoming more self-aware to be a linear journey. So part one shows my journey, but in the ways of, I call them roots and echo. So there's roots, how something got established, and then how it showed up in my life when I was 20, 30, and so on. Then in part two, I go into a methodology. This is, I've been coaching for 7 years now, and so this is, I distilled the things that I work on with my clients, and I put all that in part two. So effectively, part two also became a year-long program for people. You can take part two and take a year and go through that whole transformation and have it not just be a self-help book, but a true nervous system upgrade. And that's also full of stories. As I said, I had all these stories I wanted to put in to illustrate how this really happens in life. And then part three is mostly stories of my clients. And there's a story about my mom, so different people from my life, of how does stepping into who we truly are and giving our gift to the world, how does that look like? I really wanted to make sure that I don't glorify financial success or external success, but showing what is, if you follow what's important to you, what might that look like? And for one of my clients that I took on the international journey, that looked like not getting to the summit. So we might think, oh, she got to the summit, she got what she needed, but it actually didn't happen. Something else happened though, and you will have to read the book to find out.
Now, what I know about you is that you weave wilderness exploration and challenges into your coaching. How does now, I spent quite a bit of time, maybe not like you, but I've climbed Rainier 8 times, Kilimanjaro once, done 500-mile solo backpacking trip. So I'm a wilderness boy. How do you leverage the wilderness in helping your clients get to know themselves better?
Oh, yeah. So, as because you did all this stuff, and I don't think more is better or whatever, or higher is better or whatever, you have had the experience of it. And I guess what I immediately thought of is we don't leverage it. My only job truly happens in the process of enrolling someone and saying, hey, give it a shot. Go and put yourself there. I just did a trip. I climbed Half Dome with two guys, incredibly successful people with enormous amount of responsibility in the world. Like when I heard what they deal with, I was like, oh my God, that's a lot of responsibility. So we went to climb a mountain. We went to climb Half Dome. And as I was listening to them tell me about their work and designing the trip, I thought, let's make it slow, right? Let's not get them to the top and down because they know how to do this. They know how to achieve the thing and be like, yeah, I did it, right? So I'm like, no, we're going to do it in 3 days. And we worked in a lot of time of, which turned out to be the most sacred time of us actually sitting by the river. We had a water pump that took quite a bit of time to pump the water. And so I would just be like, hey, let's go pump water. And we'd spend 2 hours.
Oh my goodness.
There's these guys who have to make financial decisions about millions of dollars, and here they are pumping water, going, oh my God, I needed it so much.
What do you think that does to those high-powered executives that play in boardrooms and run companies? And what do you think happens inside of us when we get out in the wilderness and just are forced to slow down? We're maybe do things that are uncomfortable or not normal for us. What happens to us psychologically, emotionally, physiologically?
Yeah, we see this every single time I see this, and it's the same that I think our nervous system, we're mirroring creatures. So when we put ourselves in an environment that's in a certain way, such as New York City traffic, our nervous system will mirror what's happening in there, right? And then we get used to it, then we call it normal. And I don't want to make that wrong. It's not wrong. It's also part of the world we live in. It just so happens that when we go and pump water for 2 hours, we end up looking at how the water flows and start staring at the little bit of the sun ray on the little wave and the leaf. And we start breathing and mirroring that. And that can be, especially for the New York City person, right? That can be incredibly novel in their nervous system. And I don't want to sell this as like, this is will happen to you, but inevitably what I notice happening a lot is as we slow down and mirror in our nervous system the nature around us, we start creating new neural connections. And new neural connections often in this situation feel like more aliveness, curiosity, and new ideas, which is what everyone's after, right?
I'm taking a bunch of my clients on a whitewater rafting trip next summer. I've taken quite a few on backpacking trips, just little 30-mile, 3-day trips. And this always happens. It always happens where just the slowing down, like you said, the nervous system, our brain just relaxes. We get more creative. We have deeper conversations. Like, we need that. Let's go back to the book. Define badassery. So it's Masters of Badassery. Define badassery in practical terms. What's inside a person that you would like to help them see.
Yeah, I purposefully use that term because from the outside it might look like do the hard thing, be courageous, override your nervous system, override your fears. And that's so the title is a little bit in there to cause a person to go, huh? What is that? What is she talking about? Especially that I start leading with a lot of childhood trauma. So we all experience trauma. We've all been through a lot of hardship, more than most of us share, right? So that's an integral part of our world. It's not bad, it's just what is. And it actually fuels our compassion. And I know you know a lot about it, HR. It fuels our compassion because we can relate to others that are going through difficulty from a place of having gone through it and seen from the other side. And that's talk about mirroring. That's incredibly helpful. So I first want to acknowledge that. To me, badassery is trusting yourself, following what you know is true to you, and putting yourself out there, not from a place of, I'm going to overcome. I'm not like, oh, I'm going to get to the summit and be the person who is on the summit. But as I let that guide me, it will teach me. And generally, what it teaches us is resilience. And resilience is the number one thing that will actually help us be successful in anything that we do.
What did you have to unlearn or unbelieve to become the woman who wrote this book?
So much.
Give
So
me
much.
one or two things that you had to let go of and release. Okay, that's not.
I'll tell you one that's actually really funny, and actually it was on the surface as I was writing, and I told you already that there's a experiential part of part two is an experiential part of the book. And I was sitting there going, who the hell needs another self-help book? Look at
Right?
Amazon, like
Yeah, right.
seriously. And it was a real thought. And I knew it was we all have these thoughts. And I was sitting with it. I didn't believe it. I didn't go, okay, nobody needs it. I'm going to stop writing. But I entertained this thought and I thought, okay, why wouldn't I just, when I talk to the client, tell them to read The Wisdom of Insecurity by Alan Watts and just go and read that book. But then I realized the only thing that I can fully, in full integrity, mirror to others is me. I can't mirror Alan Watts to the person, right? So if they talk to Alan Watts, that's the book they should read. But somehow this person is in my Zoom room. They're on my trip. They're climbing with me, right? I am their point of entry because somehow we got put together by the powers of God and the universe that I don't understand how that works, but I don't have to. And so the only message that I can fully, coherently deliver is mine.
What happens when, let's say, this high-powered executive or mid-level manager says, "Yeah, climbing Half Dome or El Capitan, or that sounds amazing. I'm going to go out with this girl, and she's going to teach me how to climb." And what's the biggest misconception they have about the experience, and what do they typically, on average, come to face with?
Biggest misconceptions are that this is something that will happen externally. I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to have to learn this and this, and then I'm going to have to be prepared and then I'll succeed or not. That's what we all think. And I honestly think that too when I first went to climb El Cap, right? Oh, I'm going to learn all these skills and all this stuff. And if I'm good enough, I'll do it. But what really happens is the moment you step on the journey, the moment you step on the journey, normally it happens to people when they wire the money, right? So it's like their commitment to
They're in,
this,
yeah.
they're in and they're like, holy shit, holy shit. Because what happens is the amount of internal rewiring is incredible through the year, right? And like I spoke of one client, like you might get to the summit or not, but you'll get what you're after, because anything that you're doing in your life is going to be exaggerated and shown to you on the plate, and you won't be able to ignore it anymore. So, in other words, you're going to go to climb a mountain and you're going to fix your marriage.
That was going to be my next question. Let's say I spend time with you climbing something hard, or take your advice and go out in the woods and do something challenging on my own. How does this affect my practical life? How does it affect my marriage, how I parent my kids, how I run my company, how I treat my neighbors? What's the change in me or in your clients long term?
Yeah, in
Besides, I did it.
yeah. Yeah, and that's great. And the I did it factor is something that helps you talk about this with others and so on, right? It's this external thing that is why I called my book Masters of Badassery, because people want that external thing, right? What really happens on the inside is, and it really depends on how much you're willing to go into this, right? Everybody's going to go at the speed of their nervous system. But what if you're willing to see what are the barriers that you put between yourself and the power of love in life, when you're willing to look at it, and it will come out in the first climb we do, in the first trip we do, even in the first conversation we do, if you're willing to see it and go, oh, this isn't serving me and anyone around me, then you're on the way of eliminating the distortion in which life, such as judgment, hyperachieving, people pleasing, and so on, many others, right? And just be present with who you are with the person or with the business deal, or and that ends up, for example, changing long term patterns that you've had in your marriage, right? You go out there, you realize that at hour 16 of the climb, you are a puddle and you are unable to do the thing, and something changes in you, and you go back home and you're different with your husband, guaranteed.
What is the most common mask that you see come down out there? What's the most common mask that we wear as leaders, high achievers, high performers that you see out in the wilderness on a difficult physical journey begin to erode?
For such a beautiful question. Thank you for it.
Because we all.
I'll speak of me first because I think it's most powerful. Is we think that when we do something and we're successful, that will provide a sense of safety in the world. I did Everest. That means I am good, that I am successful. You should trust me. So we invest in our image so much more than in actual being with people around us. So what I see when I go there, and I've been doing this almost 30 years, and it happens over and over, then I have an idea that I'm going to go and gain love and appreciation and acceptance through having done something, and it just gets dissolved because the mountain does not care whether you climb it. It does it, and it doesn't care in a bad way. It just says, you are here, thank you. I am in so much joy that you came to spend time with me, right? So for me, over and over, it teaches me presence without needing to have achieved something to secure whatever it is that my mind wants to
Yeah.
secure.
Here's how I've said it to others. Now, I'm certainly not on your level, but I've climbed Rainier 8 times. I've led 46 people up to the summit of Rainier. And about the fourth or fifth climb, someone asked me, why do you keep, I have a real job. I'm building companies. This isn't my job. Why do you keep climbing Rainier? You've been to the summit. You know, you've been to the summit. And I said, I don't climb Rainier to see the summit. I climb Rainier to discover who I am in the climb. So when I first climbed Rainier, it was about the summit. It was about saying I stood on the roof of Washington. Then it became I discovering who I am, resilient, hard things, more primal. I get to just not be responsible for a million other things. I get to just focus on this next step up the mountain that Is that what you're saying? You discover who you are in the climb or whatever the thing is that you're doing?
Yeah, I think that I love how you described it because to me, when I hear your experience on Rainier, it's a different experience every time. And every time you meet yourself where you're ready to meet yourself.
Yeah, that's
And
right.
so there isn't a generic experience that we're going to have. You're not going to get what you came for, but you're going to get what you need
Yeah,
in the moment.
that's good. So let's say someone that they don't have the inclination to climb El Cap, they're not going to climb Rainier. What are some baby steps into badassery that people can take to just kind of get started in discovering this part of themselves that they may not even know exists?
Yeah, I many and everybody can start right in their living room, right? And there's a few things. One is to spend some time fully listening where your energy and your aliveness is flowing, right? So it's natural world is a mirror that helps us see where we are, right? We can and people experience that with like playing with their dog or riding horses, right? So you don't have to go to Everest to get that. If that's where you want to play, that's awesome, right? But it's not needed.
Yeah.
To me, it's about quality of attention with ourselves, and nature just so happens to be a backdoor, the way I look at it.
If a listener feels stuck, and maybe you just answered this question, if a listener feels stuck, what would be the first thing you encourage them to do? They're stuck in life, they're stuck in their thinking, they're in a routine, they're in a rut, life is boring. All the things, if they feel stuck, what's the first thing you'd encourage them to go do?
There is a exercise I really love starting people up with, because it's always easy to say go on a trip or find a big goal or change something up, but everybody already knows this, right? So what is something that if you are inner city and you really don't have any money to go do anything, right?
Yeah.
I love the I call this a nature sit, and you can do it in a city park, you can go on a hike. And there's many version of doing this, but basically what it is, you decide to focus on something in your life, right? Maybe even stuckness. That could be the first thing oh, I feel stuck. And going around and seeing how everything in the natural world informs you. Tree, tell me about stuckness. Grass, beetle, tell me about stuckness. Inevitably, what's going to happen is you're going to find a new way of thinking about it. And so our circumstances are never the problem. It's just what we think about our
Sure.
circumstances that makes us stuck, right? So it's a really gentle, accessible way for anyone to do it at any time. And I do it a lot. I do it daily because I get stuck in my thinking too.
Okay. Last question. My life, my podcast, my books are all about empowering the generation coming behind me, investing in young leaders, leaving the world a better place than I found it, making a dent in the universe. Marta, if you're going to give one piece of advice to that 18-year-old coming out of high school or 22-year-old coming out of college, what one piece of life advice would you give her or him to help them lead a life that is fulfilling and powerful and informed?
What I would say is you are valuable. You have incredible value to give to the world. You might not see it right now, but I see it in you, and I see it in every single one of you that's coming out in that way. And so trust me that you have this value. And if you were to believe that you do, how would you live? What would be your next step? And it doesn't, I don't think there's a prescription for that at all. But if you were to believe, or just trust me, that you have something to give, to contribute, and it's good, then the second step would be to follow what is the aliveness that's coming through you? What is it that you're interested in that makes you feel alive? And just follow that. And if you do these two things, you can't go wrong. You will become a powerful leader, and you'll be take big part of changing the world the way we, HR, you and I see the world developing into this thing, and every one of you can be part of it.
Marta, thank you so much for your time. Masters of Badassery is the book. I know it's going to be awesome. You're going to touch many lives. I appreciate your time. Thank you for your insights. I can't wait to follow your journey even more. I've known you for a few years now. I'm honored to have you as a friend, and I wish you the very best, my friend. Thank you for being on the show.
So fun, and thank you for everything you do, HR.
That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us on The Leader's Edge. I hope today's conversation inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and impact. Here are my big three takeaways from my conversation with Marta. Number one, she has a huge belief, and I agree with this, a huge belief in human potential. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I believe the greatest waste in history is the waste of human potential. She believes, as do I, that each and every one of us is capable of incredible impact and transformation, and we just need to dig in and find who we really are. Number two is there's a powerful connection to nature. There's something that happens powerfully when we're out in the woods, out in the wilderness, climbing rocks, playing around trees, swimming in lakes. I absolutely believe this. I've spent hundreds and hundreds of nights out in the woods, often by myself. And there is something powerful that happens inside of us, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, out there. So I encourage you, if you haven't been out in nature in a while, even it could be a city park, your front yard, your feet in the grass, get out there. And number three, my big three takeaway is that hard things are more about becoming than conquering. This is a lesson I've also learned. I used to, in my younger years, want to do hard things so I could conquer them, and I realized that they helped me become a better version of myself. So hard things are good for us, not just for conquering, but for transformation. Great stuff from Marta. Listen, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I'd love a five-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders like you, and that's the point of this podcast, is to help transform a leadership culture where we are investing in those coming behind us and investing in each other. Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leaders Ed Podcast on all major platform. So until next time, keep pushing boundaries, keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman, and I'll see you soon.